Thanks for tuning into Art Speak Radio here in 90.1 FM, KKFI. I'm Mark Manning. Today I'm filling in as your host for your regular host and producer, my friend Maria Vasquez Boyd. Today on Art Speak Radio, we'll talk with Kansas City professional photographer and filmmaker Dan Wayne about his new documentary film, Be Big Fur, that follows friend Ken Walker, a world champion taxidermist, on his search for Bigfoot, researching specific sightings, and his life-size recreation of the fabled forest creation. At around 12:15, we're going to talk with Ira Harrett from the American Friends Service Committee, who joins us to share information about a new exhibit at five locations in KC displaying poster art produced by students and artists, all depicting concerns about bullying, child abuse, racism, war, hunger, poverty, police abuse of power and equality. Exhibits will be up through December 18th at Paseo Academy, Northeast Library, Plaza Library, Southeast Library, and Cristo Rey High School. At around 12:27, dancer and performance artist Kat Mahari and jazz trumpeter Herman Mahari join us to share information about BAM, the workshop, a dynamic, interactive, multimedia performance approach to diversity and inclusion training. And also at around 12:42, Rhiannon Ross, Eve Ott, and Randy Ratliff join us to discuss the Riverfront Reading Series and their annual Riverfront Holiday Open Mic, Sunday, December 13th at 2 o'clock at Prospero's Books at 1800 West 39th Street. And in our final moments of the show, Blair Schulman joins us by phone to share thoughts on the passing of Holly Woodlawn, an Andy Warhol superstar and transgender pioneer of the New York downtown art scene. Please stay tuned. And good afternoon. Thank you for being with us here on Art Speak Radio. Kansas City professional photographer and filmmaker Dan Wayne's new documentary film, Big Fur, is now in post-production with a completed rough cut in hand. Dan has begun submitting Big Fur to film festivals, and there is a Kickstarter campaign underway to raise additional funds, money that will be spent on post-production and original score, music licensing rights, animation and graphics. And joining us on the phone is Dan Wayne. Dan, thanks for being with us on Art Speak Radio.
Well, thanks for having me, Mark.
I know you're a big supporter and listener of 90.1 FM. It's good to have you on the radio airwaves with us today.
Well, thanks so much. It's good to be here.
So you've spent the last 3 years of your life going all across the country following your friend, a world champion taxidermist Ken Walker, as he's searched for Bigfoot, talking with people who've actually seen Bigfoot, and finally capturing his work, making a life-size recreation of Bigfoot. This has been quite a journey for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been quite a trip. Actually, I didn't know Ken until I started this project, and when I met him, you know, he's kind of known in the taxidermy world for his recreations, which are using hides of other animals to create usually extinct or endangered animals. So when he told me he was going to make the Bigfoot, I thought, well, there's a great movie right there.
This is a documentary film, is that correct?
Yeah, it sure is.
And you've kind of got it put together now. You're just kind of working on post-production work on the film. Where are you at currently in the whole process of making this film?
Well, I'm very close to the end, but I'm also very far. You know, it's I've done everything I could myself up to this point. So the whole thing is shot and in the can, as they say, even though there's no more can. It's kind of left over from the film days. But
right.
We have a rough cut. It's pretty good. I think we're on our third cut right now. And, you know, there's just a lot of finishing touches to do, color correction and sound engineering, and we're going to do an original score and a little bit more animation. And so, yeah, these last little pieces, you know, they're kind of pricey and kind of time-consuming, so we started a Kickstarter campaign to try to raise funds for that.
You're known for many, many years in Kansas City as a professional photographer for your still photography, beautiful work. What's it like moving from that into the world of making film?
Well, it's pretty exciting. You know, I kind of I've been shooting film on and off in video for almost 20 years now. So. But it never really went into it full time. I always had little projects on the side, mostly short films. So this has been quite a departure. And it's great, you know, the digital video world has changed so much that it's at the point now where I could go and shoot this thing myself and do all the sound and everything. So right. I was really, you know, a one-man crew, which would have been almost impossible, not unheard of, but almost impossible back in the film days.
You've been all over following your friend Ken Walker in his pursuit of he actually wants to see Bigfoot, doesn't he?
He does. He and a whole host of other people want to see Bigfoot. I'm not sure I want to see Bigfoot, though.
Where are some of the wildest places that you've been to in this pursuit?
Well, Ken lives in Alberta, outside of Edmonton, in Canada. And, you know, I'd never been up there before I started this project. And I went up there and spent some time in this area that he calls his habituation area, or Bigfoot research area is kind of what I refer to it as. And it's on the eastern slopes of the Canadian Rockies. And it's really a vast wilderness. I had no idea just how, you know, remote these areas are. And the area I spent a few weeks, you know, they call it the bush. I spent a few weeks in the bush up there in an area that a trapper friend had several sightings. And, you know, there was no access to that area until about 10 years ago when logging and oil and gas industries came in. And so it was at that point that the movie kind of took on another element, and that's kind of an environmental message, because that area, some of the last remaining wilderness up there in Canada, is really being decimated by heavy industry. And, you know, I think that we face a real threat here of losing, you know, the last of our wild places while, you know, the federal government is considering turning over a lot of their protected lands to the state, who are almost certainly going to open them up to industry.
I noticed that in the press release it talks about how Ken is in search of Bigfoot, and hopefully before the real wilderness where Bigfoot's habitat exists is not destroyed by logging and mining. I read that in the press release. That's really interesting and sad to hear about. You have launched a Kickstarter campaign. I know a lot of bands, a lot of artists launch Kickstarter campaigns to help with, you know, getting an album done on vinyl or helping to promote it. And also a lot of people that make film use Kickstarter to help people make that small investment in helping a film get made. It's kind of important for filmmakers to have that financial support or those people that kind of help you along. Is that true?
That's true. You know, these things can get kind of expensive. And, you know, projects like mine aren't really, they don't have access to traditional funding sources. So crowdfunding really makes a lot of sense. You know, people that are interested in it, they can contribute and get, you know, rewards that make it a little easier, you know, to donate, but ultimately they're just supporting the project because they see that, you know, it's somebody's dream and that it's, you know, in this case, a story worth telling.
You know, people can go to bigfurmovie.com to learn more about the film. I think there's a trailer that people can see at that site. Is there a link to the Kickstarter campaign from that?
There sure is, Mark. We made it pretty hard to miss.
Very good.
So if you go to the movie's website, you can see the link. And, yeah, there's a 3-minute preview that's posted there. And there's a gallery of photos and all kinds of other information.
Very good. How much longer do you have with that campaign?
It ends tomorrow at 3.
All right.
Time is running out.
So it's a good thing that you're on the show today to let people know about it. People can go to bigfurmovie.com. In the press release that you sent us, it says that for now, Ken's denied a happy ending to this film, which seems like true love proves illusory. It's an illusion, but he's still sure that any day the existence of Bigfoot will be confirmed. I'm reading this from the press release. Until then, he's kept looking. Kind of his desire for this kind of led him to create this gigantic taxidermy, I want to call it sculpture piece, of Bigfoot. Tell us about that.
Well, it is a sculpture. It's very interesting. You know, he modeled it after the iconic image that almost everybody knows of Bigfoot, which is from the 1967 Patterson-Gimlin film, which ironically is the only piece of Bigfoot evidence that all Bigfooters agree is real. You know, it's never really been debunked. I've always found it odd that the only good evidence we have is from 16 millimeter film from you know, over 40 years ago. But those frames have been analyzed to death, and the measurements have been extrapolated, and you know, that was what he used as reference. So, you know, I filmed the whole process of him making this, from researching it and you know, carving the form out of foam and finding the right hair for it and putting the whole thing together. It was really, it's a pretty cool process. I mean, you get to watch an artist make something like that is pretty exciting. And then he unveiled it at the 2015 World Taxidermy Championship, which was in Springfield, Missouri in May. So that was kind of an exciting time.
I'll say. I have a stepbrother who's a taxidermist in Blue Hill, Nebraska, and he's won a lot of awards and done a lot of installations for the man that owns Sabella's, the sporting goods store.
Uh-huh.
He has quite a mansion full of lots of taxidermy things you can imagine. So it's really an art form to see that kind of work created and done. And you yourself are an amateur taxidermist. I was surprised to read that.
Well, I'm not a very good one, but I'm learning. It's an interesting process. It's an interesting craft and form of art because it has all these different elements to it. You know, it has sculpture and painting and design. There's all these different things. It's kind of, you know, art married to craft, married to science. And of course, you've got the real piece to compare it to.
Right.
If it doesn't look like a squirrel, then it's not really a squirrel.
I hear you. Do you have any closing comments before we say goodbye about the film, about the Kickstarter campaign? You're going to be going to film festivals coming up the next year, aren't you?
Yes. I've been submitting and hopefully be hearing back from them in the next couple months. And, yeah, I'll be on tour with the film. I'm sure I'll have a screening here in Kansas City. So if people want to go to the website, they can keep track of that. Any screening will be posted pretty clearly on there. And they can, of course, also reach the Kickstarter there at bigfurmovie.com.
Excellent. Dan Wayne, a pleasure talking with you on the radio. Hopefully we can have you back on the radio next year to talk more about this film and learn more about it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks. Dan Wayne is director, co-producer of Big Fur, a new documentary film. He studied photography at Kansas University and film at New York University. This is his first feature. He's also an amateur taxidermist, and Dan lives in Kansas City, Missouri. You can get more information at bigfurmovie.com. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Ira Harrett about a new project of the American Friends Service Committee, a new poster art project that's real exciting. Please stay tuned. And you're listening to Art Speak Radio here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My voice is a little bit deeper. I'm not Maria Vasquez-Boyd. I'm filling in for my good friend today, who is away taking care of some business, and we're happy to be here in her place on her beautiful show, Art Speak Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Ira Harrett from the American Friends Service Committee joins us to share information about a new exhibit at 5 locations in Kansas City displaying poster art produced by students and artists, all depicting concerns about bullying, child abuse, war, racism, hunger, poverty, police abuse of power, equality. The exhibits will be up through December 18th at Paseo Academy, Northeast Library, Plaza Library, Southeast Library, and Cristo Rey School. And there's some special openings we're going to tell you about. Ira Harrett, thank you so much for being with us again on Art Speak Radio.
My pleasure.
You do so many good things for our community, and you have throughout your whole lifetime, so I thank you for all of the good stuff that you do. American Friends Service Committee organized this poster project, and you kind of have coordinated all of this, haven't you?
Myself and three AFSCP's interns have implemented the project, and we've just had a great time working with youth from all over the metropolitan area, basically inspiring them to think about issues that are important to them, and then creating poster art that speaks to the injustice or the hopes that they have on these different issues.
How many? You have over 200 area youth involved in this project, I understand.
Well, we worked with 12 different youth sites, and some of the locations we worked with two or three or more groups, and so the numbers added up, and we you know, had a lot of youth involved.
Wow. How many posters are there altogether?
I think they're about, on exhibit, the youth posters are about 175, maybe, and then there are about 45 posters from the traveling exhibit produced by artists from across the country.
That's right. This is all coinciding with a traveling exhibit. Can you talk about that?
Sure. There's a traveling exhibit entitled All of Us Are None, Humanized, Not Militarized. It was created by the American Friends Service Committee, basically wanting to use art to kind of increase the dialogue around public policy, particularly the militarization of the police, the prisons, borders, war and peace issues. And so there's some fabulous pieces that have been created by these artists that are on display at all these different locations.
This is running right now through the 18th, this poster art exhibit. And there's so many posters that you have five exhibits happening simultaneously.
That's right.
That's a lot of work, isn't it, to organize all that. These different venues have been really helpful, and they're collaborating partners, essentially, with this whole project, aren't they?
Yes. We had groups, youth groups that were at each of those locations that we worked with. And then they graciously agreed to host the traveling exhibit, as well as the works that either their youth or other youth in the area had created.
There are two openings happening.
Well, they already
happened.
They took place last weekend, and we had a great time at Paseo Academy, and it coincided with their seasonal coffee house. And we had probably 150 youth come through the exhibit and see the art and think about the issues that are raised in by the pieces.
While we're talking, if you're on your computer, you can go to afsc.org/Kansas City to learn more about the American Friends Service Committee and this special exhibit that they've organized. We're talking with Ira Harrett, who has worked with the American Friends Service Committee. How many years have you been with the American Friends Service Committee?
Oh, it's approaching 30.
Wow, congratulations. Tell us about why you feel passionate about poster art and why this is such a great medium to convey so many different things.
I think poster art is a great medium. I'd say our interest is to inspire young people to think about these issues and to find their voice. And poster art offers a wonderful opportunity to do that, to kind of figure out what's the message, what are some of the issues that are important to them, and then to decide what do they want to say to the community. And so we also use spoken word poetry, which is also wonderful. And in previous years, we've used video, film. But we actually stopped using the video project and switched to this poster art project, feeling that many more youth could really complete a project and make their statement and see their statement out there for others to reflect on and understand.
I love that. Did you want to tell us about some of the posters?
I can comment on some. Some of the posters were made by art classes, and so some of their work really kind of has that more artistic quality. Others are really just sincere expressions of messages that youth have. At Paseo Academy, there was one poster that I was struck by depicting a woman and the words feminism, and stating, "We need feminism because I hear someone referring to a woman. When I hear someone referring to a woman, I hear the word bitch more than queen." So just, you know, all kinds of ways that that the youth have kind of found to kind of express their concerns. A lot of youth spoke about borders and presented different kinds of images of a wall and breaking the wall down. And one youth commented, "How is dividing people the land of the free?" And so others spoke about peace and the need for the end of violence and community violence. Child abuse actually was an issue that came up, I think, you know, basically reflecting real-life experiences that these young people have had. Many were concerned about police brutality and the end of discrimination. as well as LGBT and other issues.
I read in the press release that you said among some of the most striking pieces were works by art classes at Paseo Academy and Cristo Rey High School,
mm-hmm.
Depicting, like you mentioned, bullying, child abuse, racism, hunger, poverty, police abuse of power, equality, all these issues affecting these young people on a daily basis. What were the guidelines for creating these works of art? Were there any directions to them specifically about what they could and could not include?
We left it pretty wide open. We took them through a kind of a experiential kind of training where they which prompted them to reflect on injustice and hopes that they had. We introduced them to posters from social movements of the past and how that poster art was designed to make a statement or call people to action in regards to the issues that the movement was addressing. And then we did kind of a poster 101 of just sort of looking at, you know, what makes a poster effective and, you know, how you can get your message across. You know, sometimes less is more was one of the kind of suggestions that we made, that if you try to say too much in a poster, you may wind up communicating less.
That's right. How can the general public see all of these posters?
Well, they are on display at these five different locations. I think all of the locations are open during, you know, their normal business library hours for the libraries and school hours. Well, Cristo Rey actually has hours from noon to 6. Paseo, it suggested that you give them a call you make an appointment to get into their gallery.
The American Friends Service Committee is involved in all kinds of projects all year long. This is one of many things that you're responsible for, isn't it?
Right. Actually, after the first of the year, we switched from the poster project to the All of Us or None spoken word project with youth. And then we also have a MLK forum coming up on January 18th at 3 o'clock. That's the King that Monday, the holiday. It just precedes the mass celebration. This year the theme is moving the money, concrete steps to take for economic justice. And so we're excited to hold that forum every year, and we get a big turnout, and we really talk about the radical changes that Dr. King called for and how we can implement them today.
Hopefully we can maybe have you back on the radio to talk more about this in the future. If not on this show, maybe one of our other wonderful shows. So I know you've been a big supporter of community radio from the very beginning, haven't you? You've sort of watched this radio station grow up, haven't you?
I have, yes.
What are we leaving out of the conversation? What do you want to make sure that we mention before we say goodbye?
Well, I just want to just reiterate please do go to the locations and see the exhibit. You can also see the posters of the youth online at the American Friends Service Committee Kansas City Facebook page in the photo albums there. And please comment online and tell others about the exhibit.
Ira Harrit, thank you so much for being with us today on Art Speak Radio. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
The All of Us or None poster art exhibit is on display through December 18th at 5 locations, Paseo Academy Art Gallery at 4747 Flora Avenue, Plaza Library at 4801 Main Street, the Northeast Library at 6000 Wilson Avenue, the Southeast Library at 6242 Swope Parkway, and the Cristo Rey High School at 211 West Linwood Boulevard in Kansas City, Missouri. And you can see all of these different posters on exhibit. And for more information, you can go to the American Friends Service Committee, www.afsc.org/Kansas City, or you can call them at 816-931-5256. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Kat Mahari and Herman Mahari about a great workshop that they're working on after these brief messages. You're listening to 90.1 FM. This is Art Speak Radio. Thank you for being with us. And you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Art Speak Radio. My name is Mark Manning. I'm filling in for our regular host and producer, Maria Vasquez-Boyd. Thanks for being with us today. Kat Mahari is a dancer, performance artist, and choreographer. Her work in movement is informed by explorations of human conditions through multiple styles of dance, theater, including breaking, funk, house, ballet, contemporary physical theater. She's an alumni of the Conservatory of Music and Dance at Kansas City, Missouri, and the Royal School of Speech and Drama in London, England. She was the Charlotte Street Foundation Urban Culture Project Performing Artist in Residence and was awarded the 2010 KC Arts Inspiration Grant for her multimedia work, The Projects. And she joins us today with Herman Mahari, who is a 2010 graduate of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. This fall, he finished first in the prestigious Carmine Carusa International Jazz Trumpet Competition at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas. Also a semifinalist in the 2014 Thelonious Monk Jazz Competition. And he released the CD Our Journey with his band Diverse in 2014 and was part of Bobby Watson's 2013 release Check Cashing Day, which was one of our favorite releases of the year. We love that so much. He's also the winner of the 2008 National Trumpet Competition and placed second in the International Trumpet Guild Competition in Sydney, Australia. He splits his time between touring all over the world and playing here in the hometown of Kansas City. Kat Mahari, Herman Mahari, thank you both for being with us on Art Speak Radio.
Oh, thank you for having
me. So tell us about BAM.
Well, BAM, the workshop, is a workshop that was founded through a project that was co-produced by Charlotte Street Foundation and premiered last April called Expectation of Violence / Rights Do Spring BABAM. And that was a project, an immersive theater work that explored violence and its articulation and definition with blackness and all the stories of America. But we did it through a localized perspective, working with Mid-America Archives, the music sound collection at UMKC.
Mars Center,
working with them, working with Glenn North, really to get into the artifact history of localized experiences and narratives of America and blackness. Thank you, see.
You've lived all over the country. I know you spent your teenage years in St. Louis.
I haven't been to Idaho yet.
Yeah, not Idaho, but I read that you spent time in St. Louis kind of growing up, and then you've lived in Texas, New York, all over the place.
Yeah.
Talk about Kansas City. I know you said you did some research in the Black Archives of Mid-America, and Glenn North works there.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of history documented that a lot of people may not know about, but it really does explain a lot about our community to know that history.
Absolutely. There's a thing called bias that is, of course, we all have bias. In fact, we use it, oh, you're just being biased, that's why you don't like my band. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. But there's a biasness that plays into greater social and political mobilizations and organizations of people that comes about through the stories we tell. So, for instance, I would look at a Kansas City Star article from 1969, really making light of redlining and just sort of saying, well, this is sort of a practice that people are doing at this time. So that's something that people here perhaps may not know. They may not even heard of redlining until the 2008 real estate bubble. You know what I mean?
Right.
But they don't understand that this is a tactic and an ongoing situation of violence and criminality of blackness that people here in KC have contributed to, been a participant of, as well as been victim to.
As things are being exposed in Chicago with all the problems that are having with Chicago Police Department, that's been a theme that's coming out in the news in the last few days about all the redlining that's been done in Chicago also. And really, part of the reason there's so many problems is because this actually existed. Herman Mahari, thank you for being with us on the radio today.
Absolutely.
Big fan of all your music, and you contribute to so many other artists' recordings. We're going to be playing Mikel Shapiro coming up in a few weeks, and you played on her record.
Yeah.
When people want a beautiful trumpet, they call you, right?
Yes, they do.
How did you and Kat start collaborating together? How did that happen?
We've known each other for a while, back to the conservatory days.
And, you know, she was always really interested in the jazz scene and you know.
That's who I hung out with.
Exactly. She was hanging out mostly with jazz musicians as opposed to dancers, you know. But, yeah, she's had a really collaborative spirit, and I have too. And we started talking about this project specifically like 3 years ago, I'd say.
Oh, snap.
Two and a half years, you know, and we realized it through Charlotte Street at first, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Charlotte Street's been kind of instrumental in helping kind of give you a home base or a place to operate from, right?
Yeah, I was real lucky. I came back to Charlotte Street this past year, and at that time, the visiting curator was a kid named Danny, and he was already curating, putting together projects and exhibitions and shows that had a very strong awareness of the self outside of your favorite color, you know what I mean? And so I was able to really come in with him and Pat Alexander, really, really definitely chaperoning me, mentoring me out this entire past year.
What a great guy. We love Patrick. Yeah. Really wonderful man. So I saw some video of the previous band that you did,
mm-hmm.
and it's very different than the traditional situation where people are on stage and there's an audience sitting
mm-hmm.
off stage
looking at
them. You actually have people in the piece, and you're surrounding them with words, movement, music. You're kind of moving around the room, playing mm-hmm. the trumpet. Tell mm-hmm. us, for the radio audience who are kind of making that picture in their imagination, tell us about it. What does it look like?
Well, it looks like life. It really looks like your life. If you have ever walked down a single street and you've heard music and you've seen people move, whether it's from the bus to the bus stop or somebody is feeling something so they start dancing, it's life, basically. That's why immersive theater, I believe, is so critical, because it gives you that full sensory experience that you're getting in life as you go about your day and participate. And that's what these greater structures of injustice, they go about your life. They're in your day-to-day life.
Where can people go to get... Oh, go ahead, Herman. Did you want to talk
about this? Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it kind of takes down this wall in terms of performance so that you're actually feeling the intent of the piece, you know?
Right.
Like, you have to feel the intent of the piece because you're involved in it, in the middle of it.
It seems like it. It seems kind of intense for the audience to be surrounded by all of this.
This thing how intense it is for me. I'm black. Right?
And I know there's multimedia involved. You have video, slides, there's a soundtrack. I heard Glenn North's voice in one of the clips that I saw.
He speaks about the importance of connecting your narrative to things that have come before in order to build forward. And that was a very important thing that we wanted to include, as well as to bring it further home that this is about you.
What is the future of the BAM workshops? When is the next?
The next one, we're in conversation with a number of different organizations to have it. It's actually available for a nonprofit as well as for-profit organizations, because BAM, the workshop, takes the idea of the piece and really goes even further with having a strong facilitated discussion with us. Psychologist, moderator, and was really able to pinpoint and deal with the exact circumstances and events that are surrounding whoever is hosting us at that time. So, for instance, some organizations, they're so small that they don't necessarily have archives. So from that particular perspective, we look at it from more of a neighborhood or citywide situation. So we're bringing in that kind of historical narrative. But then you have organizations like Time Magazine, like Google, like AT&T, that actually have their own archival. So when they are able to get us in, we're able to go through their archival information and actually incorporate that into the work so that they are being able to experience the life that they have lived and then make hopefully much more productive choices about the life they want to continue to have as an organization.
I love that. So you could literally go into their conference room or boardroom and do this workshop for them in a special situation. Well, what's next for both of you? What are you working on? Herman, you've always got a lot of different projects going on, don't you?
Yeah.
The Buzz.
We just recorded a music video in Paris, and we'll be releasing it soon. And we've got our annual Mardi Gras party coming up sometime in January. So that's something to look out for.
Excellent. I know, Kat, you're doing a lot of things.
I'm so super psyched and I'm so super lucky because and coming back, I just came back from the Bay Area where I was out there visiting, and coming back to KC and people were like, "Oh, you're going back?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I got a flight." You know, and it was so interesting. I'm like, why would you go back? I'm like, there's Rhythm Kings crew here, legendary dance crew. There's Ghoul Family here. There's Herman Mahari here. There's Min Dupar here. There's Ryan Tenney. There's Diane Burkholder. There's Luz Ortiz. There are people that I build with, my homies, that are about doing interesting things, keeping each other interested in life, enjoying life. The buzz, the Mardi Gras party, which last year was phenomenal. You know, I mean, yeah, I'm going to come back. I'm going to be where the party is.
This has kind of become a home to you, right? I love that.
Wherever the party is.
Wherever the party is. We have such a short segment today, so I've invited both of them to come and join me on the Wednesday Midday Medley on January 13th, I believe, is the day we do a Martin Luther King celebration every year.
Really looking forward to that. Thank you.
What you're doing and what you're saying will fit perfectly with that show. And it's not just during the month of February that we need to deal with these issues and deal with Black history. It's an all year round, every day of the year, part of our lives, part of all of us, right?
Absolutely. And it's a beautiful thing. I think denying reality, dealing with those delusions, that's why we have so many issues. Trust me, accepting your challenges and gaining the homies or the friends and the network and support to face them and deal with them productively and consistently, I mean, that's what being an adult's about. And that is fun, and that is beautiful.
It is. It is. Thank you for that. And before we go, I want to ask you about Bobby Watson. I know both of you are connected because
of Bobby's the best.
The Conservatory
I got so many Bobby stories.
The Conservatory of Music is really a gift to our community in so many ways, and all of these great jazz musicians. There's a whole new generation of jazz happening in Kansas City, right, Herman?
There is. Yeah, he's kind of revolutionized it, rekindled the, you know, kind of the young energy of it, you know, and it's just kind of spiraling out, you know. He was the start of it, but it's just kind of, you know, snowballing, you know.
We have a living legend here in our community who's put out over 70 albums, just so much great music. And Check Cashing Day, if you're listening right now and you haven't heard that release, it's something that everybody needs to hear because it's a beautiful work of art. Mm-hmm. Also, the words of Glenn North are all over that record, and you play on that. So thank you both so much for being with us on the
radio
today. Thank
you. I just want to make sure that people know to come out to Expect BAM. That's the name of the website, expectbam.com. Check us out. Check out. We have a lovely little trailer that was put together, as well as information, further information about the workshop and how you can get directly in contact with us. You know, and I just got back to KC like 2 hours ago. And
wow. Well, welcome
glad
back.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Glad you can be in our community radio station.
Go get some barbecue tofu.
Yeah. Please know you're always welcome on the radio. Both
Thank
of
you so much
I
for
love
having
you both.
Yeah.
You can go to expectbam.com for more information about all of this great work. All right, coming up, we've got people talking about the Riverfront Readings annual holiday open mic. Please stay tuned. All right, you're back here with Art Speak Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. My name is Mark Manning. I'm filling in today for our regular beautiful host, Maria Vasquez-Boyd, who is the founder and producer of this show and put this whole show together today. I'm just kind of filling in for her and doing my best to interview all the wonderful guests that she's lined up. And right now in our studio, we're talking about the Riverfront Reading Series that continues with their annual Riverfront Holiday Open Mic on Sunday, December 13th at 2 o'clock at Prospero's Books at 1800 West 39th Street. Here to share all the details are Rhiannon Ross and Eve Ott and Randy Ratliff. Thank you all for being with us on Art Speak Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Mark.
So where do we start? Rhiannon? Randy?
Well, we can talk about the event. It's just been going on. We were trying to figure out, and It's an old event. It might be 25 to 30 years old.
At least.
I know the last one that I can recall was upstairs at Whistler's Books down on Westport Road, and I think there may have been.
That's the last holiday open mic, or the last front reading.
The first one. But there may have even been some down at the Artist Coalition.
There was
down by the river. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was. I think it predates Whistler's Mothers.
Memory fails me, but yeah, I think it may go back that far. It's older than the World Wide Web. So
I think Carl Bettis was involved in the really early, early years.
He was, and he still is.
And Sharon Eicher might have done some
stuff. She's going to show up, I'm almost certain.
And Phil Miller.
Phil Miller, he was the founder of the Feast. He created the Riverfront Reading Series, first down there at the Artist Coalition and other locations, now often at the Writer's Place. This Prospero's venue that we're using, done a couple of times. They're very gracious hosts. We're really happy to be there. Phil Miller was often called the godfather of poetry in Kansas City, not only because he was such a fine poet, but because he was determined to be inclusive and welcoming to anyone who wanted to take an interest in poetry, as in any other field where there's little money involved. There's lots of cliquishness and lots of rivalry and like that, and Phil wouldn't have any of that. He wanted everybody to be welcomed in every venue and every opportunity, and Riverfront tries to carry on in that tradition.
I love him. Tell us about this is kind of a collaboration between a Riverfront Reading Series and the Writer's Place. Is that right, Rhiannon or Randy?
Yes, it is, with the Writer's Place Salon. It's the oldest open mic in Kansas City, and it's moderated by Sharon Eicher. I would say the godmother of poetry.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say so. I know I used to do a little show back in 1990 at a restaurant on 39th Street, and Phil and Sharon both were incredibly supportive of these young kids that were kind of trying to figure out what we're doing, and they came and helped support our events and participated too. So I love how you talk about Phil.
That's what I remember about him. He was at every event like this, supporting and encouraging and putting people together.
And Eve Ott, how are you involved in all of this?
I'm a member of the Riverfront Reading Committee and knew Phil and I were good friends, and we shared an alma mater and a teacher, so we go way back.
What brought you into Riverfront?
Phil, absolutely, all of us.
All of you.
And we do really make every effort to continue in his spirit and tradition. For instance, at the upcoming open mic on Sunday, anyone is welcome to read. You're better off to sign up first because we want to be sure everyone gets a chance. But if you're afraid or you don't want to and you sit there and say, shall I, or shan't I, that's fine. First-time readers, it's a wonderful experience to read for a live audience and get that immediate reaction. Is so educational, beneficial, sometimes painful, but usually wonderful.
The material read at the holiday open mic is reliably more accessible because we're not looking for strictly Christmas poems or anything like that, but anything seasonal about the holidays or winter or feasting or gifting or the Wizard of Oz or whatever you associate with the time of year. And we're not looking for just poetry either. We're interested in fiction. If somebody's got an original song they'd like to do, we're certainly open to that.
You'd probably accept a rant or two also, wouldn't you?
A holiday. Absolutely. And I'm sure we will have one or two.
You have something prepared, dude.
Rhiannon looks at me when I see her. I'm like, uh-oh, reputation. Go ahead.
Also, just to add another dimension, though, although a lot of people will rant and some will read humorous material, there will be others who will read very spiritually inclined poetry or fiction for the holiday season, too. We are open. That's what I want.
We get artsy stuff. We get very simple and sincere, straightforward material, and we welcome it.
Yeah. If you're listening right now and you're interested, you can contact Rhiannon Ross in advance at R-O-S-S, R-O-S, at riverfrontreadings.com. Right, Rhiannon?
That's where you want to sign up. And by the way, our flyer for the event is on the KKFI Facebook page as we speak. So, all the contact information is right there.
Randy, you brought something to read, didn't you?
I did, but you know, Rhiannon just has a new poem that's suitable for the occasion, and so I want to defer to her.
Okay.
It's suitable in that it's simple, and I wrote it last night at midnight. Okay. So it's a little rough. But it's called Traditions. A different kind of bell chimes in December, barren as winter, tinkles like ice, a reminder of hunger and little children with no toys under trees. We toss spare coins in the red kettle, continue our shopping, gather what we need for our traditions. Why do you decorate a tree in the house? Pooja from Nepal asks. We do not know our own customs. Google the history of the Christmas tree, a German Lutheran tradition brought to America. Our neighbor from the Netherlands shrieks in disbelief when she sees the headless carcass of the turkey fat with cornbread stuffing. She snaps photos with her iPhone to send to her family back home. I remember Grandma wringing the neck of a chicken with one twist of her right hand, then plucking its feathers. And my horror at the pig roast, the big sow charred in the pit, a ruby apple lodged in her gums, her eyes replaced with cherries.
Nice. Thank you. Rhiannon Ross reading what might be read at the Riverfront Reading series that continues with their annual Riverfront Holiday Open Mic, which is Sunday, December 13th at 2 o'clock at Prosperous Books at 1800 West 39th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. We're in that West 39th Street area, which is a real active and fun neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And Prosperous Books has become kind of a community center for writers in so many ways. So, and their new second floor performance space really works well for all kinds of.
We should add that there will be food and beverages available.
Nice.
It is a party.
Yep. So it is a party. A bunch of literary people getting together can be a wild party, too.
I think,
right?
We always hope.
Did you want to read something for
sure,
us?
Sure, I can give you something.
We have some writers in the room, and it's always nice when they are willing to share some of their work for us. Randy Ratliff here, live on 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Thanks. This is a found poem. That's a poem. That's a text that's written by somebody else for some other purpose that a poet discovers as something that works poetically too. So, this is I found this in the Dinner Party Cookbook by Judith Etz Hocken. That's called Planning Ahead. Again, everything should be prepared in advance. When the last guest arrives, I put the meatloaf into the oven, noting the time carefully. When it is taken out, transfer it immediately to a cutting board and let it stand in a warm place. The salmon, sliced and arranged in thin, overlapping slices on individual plates, can be on the table when the guests sit down. The mustard sauce is passed. The meatloaf, in its shiny crust, is a beautiful display to bring to the table. It must be sufficiently rested so that it does not fall apart when sliced, at least 20 minutes out of the oven. Sour cream and lingonberries already on the table may be passed. The cucumbers are served with the meat, but on separate plates. The apricot mousse comes to the table anytime you are ready.
That's nice. I love the idea of found poetry. I haven't really considered that before, but it's all around us, isn't it?
It can be, yeah. Yeah, it really can. I didn't find another one in that entire cookbook, but that one stuck out.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to three people involved in the Riverfront Reading Series and their annual Riverfront Holiday Open Mic. We have with us in the studio Rhiannon Ross. Hello, Rhiannon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Eve Ott, thanks for being with us on the radio today. And Randy Ratliff, they're here to talk about the Riverfront Holiday Open Mic, Sunday, December 13th at 2 o'clock at Prosperous Books at 1800 West 39th Street. And you can contact Rhiannon at rross at riverfrontreadings.com if you'd like to be involved in this, because it is an open mic, right?
Yes, it is.
We're looking for new readers. We're looking for first-time readers, anybody who's got something to
and young people. We would like youth to also come out and read.
Absolutely.
Any closing comments about this wonderful event that you have planned for the community?
It's always been a success, which always surprises me. People show up who we've never seen before, and old friends show up, even though it's a very busy time of year. And I'm looking forward to that happening again. We welcome whoever wants to come down and enjoy a little lighthearted poetry and literary energy.
You come too, Mark.
Okay.
And I would like to invite the students from Paseo and also Crystal Ray High School. And I'd like to do a shout out to the Crystal Ray High School kids, where I tutor and sub, and especially to the young ladies that I tutor, Gloria and Gift.
I think I can hear some screaming.
I love it. Rhiannon Ross, Eve Ott, Randy Ratliff, thank you so much for being with us on ArtSpeak Radio.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been our pleasure. We want to let people know that the Riverfront Reading Series continues with their annual Riverfront Holiday Open Mic Sunday, December 13th, 2 o'clock, Prospero's Books, 1800 West 39th Street. And you can go to riverfrontreadings.com for more information about all of that.
And our flyers on your Facebook page.
And KKFI.org's, actually our Facebook page. So just put in KKFI on Facebook and you'll get right there to it. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Lou Reed's first verse of his classic Top 40 song, Walk on the Wild Side, tells the real-life story of Holly Woodlawn, an Andy Warhol superstar and transgender pioneer of the New York art scene. Holly passed away this weekend, and on the phone, art writer Blair Shulman joins us to remember Holly Woodlawn. Hello, Blair.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad I have an opportunity to pay a small tribute to Holly. You're right. She was indeed a beloved transgender LGBT pioneer and a Warhol superstar, and it was performance artist Penny Arcade, who was also a friend as well as a co-star, who said there were no role models for someone like Woodlawn, and she really had to pave the way for people today to show her grit and determination to make things happen for herself, and she worked really hard. She spent the last years of her life in Los Angeles, where she had lived, and she was very ill and had lived in an assisted living facility in West Hollywood, and it was Penny Arcade herself, the great performance artist who is still around in New York, who started a GoFundMe account called Bring Holly Home, and it raised over $68,000, and that allowed Holly to stay where she was and, you know, die in peace. And it was all that money was raised, not in great chunks, but little bits. People gave $5 and $10 here and there. So I think to get to that kind of money by $5 and $10 really shows how beloved and how far and wide she was acknowledged for her performance. You know, she before she was part of Warhol's scene, she was friends with another pioneer, Jackie Curtis, and she was first cast in Jackie Curtis's 1968 play, Glamour, Glory, and Gold, The Life and Legend of Nola Noonan. And it was also the very first onstage appearance of Robert De Niro, who played all 10 male roles. So that was pretty funny.
Wow.
But Woodlawn caught the attention of critics in 1970 when she was in Trash with Joe D'Alessandro. She was the exasperated lover of Joe's heroin addict performance, and she received these great mainstream reviews. And I had recently, and Mark, I had recently watched it again, Trash, and she gives these soliloquies where she's totally exasperated with Joe, who's so strung out on dope that he can't, you know, make love to her, and he, all these women want to make love to him because he's Joe D'Alessandro, and she's in love with Joe and completely exasperated, but she gives this wrenching performance that's beautifully shot. You watch and you see how Paul Morrissey really took care to give her this aura of Angelica that was just fantastic. And her performance was so well received that director George Cukor started a campaign to have her nominated for a Best Actress Oscar in 1970, which was a really, really big deal back then. It was just a year after Midnight Cowboy won the Best Picture Oscar, and that was the first X-rated movie to even be nominated, let alone win the Best Picture Oscar. But But while Holly was living in L.A., and by the way, the last person with her was Joe D'Alessandro, who also lives in Los Angeles. He was in the room with her when she crossed to the other side, and I think that's very beautiful. But her time in Los Angeles was really well spent. She was she raised money for AIDS Project Los Angeles, and she performed in neighborhood theater productions, and she did film cameos. And, you know, even though she was a talented and eccentric performer, she had few illusions about her place in history, and she knew that Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side made her immortal, but that never paid her rent. You know, and people like Hollywood Lawn and the surviving superstars, Joe D'Alessandro, Viva, Penny Arcade, and Dolores DeLago, you know, theirs is a world of grit and guts and raw creativity, and it's passing away quickly. It's being replaced by this sterilized make-believe that's a bit of a, I know that's a bit of a generalization, but people behave differently about trying to score what they needed to do, and they had greater opportunities, and Holly was just one of those people that just clawed her way to make something of herself, and was a beautiful person. I didn't know her personally, but I have lots of friends who were close to her, including Penny, and to hear the tributes from all over the world pouring out and talking about how much Hollywood Lawn meant to the culture in general is really a wonderful thing to read about and listen to.
Blair, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your insight into Hollywood Lawn, who really is one of the Andy Warhol superstars that we all learned about. Not all of us know about her, but you and I and people like us really got into that whole scene. And
well, I you can see Trash on YouTube in the full film, and I really encourage people to get online and watch it. It's amazing, and her soliloquies are just fantastic, and Paul Morrissey's direction is incredible. There's no doubt that George Cukor was perfectly justified in trying to nominate her for Best Actress. And it is too bad that mainstream success eluded her. But she did do a lot of performance work. And, you know, we're glad that we have things to remember her by.
Excellent. Blair Shulman, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day.
You too. I want to let people know to stay tuned for Jazz Afternoon at 1 o'clock with Jeff Harshbarger. And then at 3 o'clock, Old G's Hangout with Groovy Grant. 6 o'clock is the All Souls Forum. Lots of great music and public affairs right here on 90.1 FM. And for Maria Vasquez Boyd and for ArtSpeak Radio, I'm Mark Manning. Thank you all for listening.